It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Featuring stimulating, in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copeland.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative, exploring whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect us all, both locally and globally. And for this, the Arts Hour, I interview local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And the show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways that we engage with the world. If you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can go to the website. It's a question of balance.com. There's podcasts there of all past shows, and you can also connect with me on social media should you wish, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. So again, that's it's a question of balance.com. On the homepage, there are tabs at the top for guests and topics, which makes it very easy to browse and choose the podcast that you might be interested in. So I encourage you to head over there, not now of course, but afterwards, and check that out. It's a question of balance.com. We've had some wonderful guests and some great topics. Well, this week, as my special guest from the arts, I'm pleased to be interviewing Chitra Banerjee Divakaruni, multi-award winning and best-selling author, poet, activist and teacher of writing. Chitra writes for children as well as adults and has published novels in multiple genres, including realistic fiction, historical fiction, magical realism and fantasy. Her themes include the Indian experience, contemporary America, women, immigration, history, myth, and the joys and challenges of living in a multicultural world. Chitra's work has been published in over 50 magazines, including The Atlantic Monthly and The New Yorker. And her writing has been included in over 50 anthologies, including The Best American Short Stories, The O. Henry Prize Stories, and The Pushcart Prize Anthology. Chitra's books have been translated into 29 languages, and many of them have been used for campus-wide and city-wide reads. Her novels include The Mistress of Spices, Sister of My Heart, The Palace of Illusions, and Oleander Girl. Several of her works have been made into films, all of which have won awards. Born in Kolkata, India, Chitra came to the United States for her graduate studies, receiving a master's degree in English from Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio, and a PhD from the University of California, Berkeley. Chitra currently teaches in the nationally ranked creative writing program at the University of Houston, where she's the Betty and Jean McDavid Professor of Creative Writing. Chitra has judged several prestigious awards, such as the National Book Award and the Penn Faulkner Award. She is also herself the winner of many awards, including the American Book Award, and also awards for her poems, such as a Gabode Award, a Barbara Deming Memorial Award, and an Allen Ginsberg Award. Chitra is an activist and serves on the advisory board of Maitra in the San Francisco Bay Area and DEA in Houston, both of which help South Asian or South Asian American women who find themselves in abusive or domestic violence situations. Chitra served on the board of Pratham, an organization that helps educate underprivileged children in India for many years and is currently on their emeritus board. Chitra's latest book, Before We Visit the Goddess, is just coming out. Welcome to the show, Chitra.
I am so delighted to be on your show, Ruth.
Well, it's lovely to have you. Thank you for making the time. Your life is embedded in the arts through your writing and teaching. I'm wondering if you can remember the first time that art had a deep effect on you, beyond just entertainment, where you realize that art can touch the spirit.
Well, I think it happened when I was very young. This is when I was living in India. I lived in a big city, the city of Kolkata. But my grandfather used to live in the village about 2.5 hours away by train. So In my summer holidays, I would go spend time with him, and I used to love living in the village. But one of my favorite experiences in the village was in the evening when my grandfather would gather all of us children, myself and my cousins, together, and he would tell us stories from our culture, like stories from our epics, like the Ramayana and the Mahabharata.
Right.
Those were like my favorite stories. And I would listen to these stories, and I think they went deep, deep into me. I didn't realize it maybe at that time, but those stories would come back, and I would think about them, and they would haunt me, and finally I would start writing about them and retelling them from a woman's perspective.
Right. And I think it's interesting that the stories that do persist through cultures, there's something very deep and archetypal often about those stories that really affects one on a very deep level, I think.
Yes, I agree with you. And even if one is a child and doesn't understand it at that point, something's going on. Something goes
yes.
on as those stories seep into you.
Yeah, absolutely. So would you say you grew up in a creative environment?
Well, it was a creative environment in many ways. The city of Kolkata is known for a long literary and cultural history. Writers like Tagore came out of that city. So, you know, I did grow up with that culture. I did not grow up thinking I would be a writer. Personally, you know, I didn't think I had the talent. I didn't think I had anything that people would be interested in. I love these old stories, but I was like, well, everyone knows these old stories anyway.
Right.
So I think it was only after I came here to America as an immigrant that I started writing. And I think immigration really made me into a writer.
Many of your characters come from India to America. What drew you to leave India?
Well, I came here for my higher studies.
Right.
And then I just met my husband and I stayed on.
Right. Because you felt that what you could study here would be more suitable, or what you wanted to do rather than what was in India?
Yes, I wanted to do my higher studies here. And then when I came here, I was really excited by America. I thought there were so many opportunities. I wanted to study American literature at that point. And, you know, one thing just led to another. And, you know, I love India and I love America. Now I feel I have two homes.
Right, yes. So when did you decide that you wanted to write professionally rather than just do it, you know, for yourself?
I think that was, and that didn't happen all at once. I think soon after, maybe a few years after moving here, I felt very compelled to tell the immigrant story. I saw that my own life had been completely transformed by living in a whole other culture where the rules were different, and especially the rules of what a woman could do, what a woman could become,
right.
They were all different over here. And I had to kind of relearn life, as it were, in America. And I saw around me that many other immigrants were doing the same thing. And I became very interested in exploring that story and telling that story from different angles.
Mm.
And that was right around, I would say, almost 1990. So it took me a good 10 years, to figure out that I wanted to write. And I had no confidence. I'd finished all of my formal education by then. I had my PhD from UC Berkeley, and I had started teaching in college.
Mm.
So I started writing on the side at night, late at night, when, you know, my husband had gone to sleep. I would just go to my study, and I would be writing these stories.
Huh. Now, you began writing poetry, I believe. So what drew you to move into novel writing?
I was writing poetry, and I was really happy with writing poetry for a while. But then I began to see that my poetry was becoming more and more narrative.
Mm.
I was becoming interested in story and in showing character growth and change.
Ah.
So at a certain point, I felt that prose would be a better medium for that. And I think I was right that prose is what allowed me to tell these many stories in these voices and to show, like, sometimes a whole lifetime, and sometimes, as in my latest book, before we visit the goddess, it's three generations of women's life.
Right, yeah. But you still write poetry as well as writing novels?
I do write poetry once in a while, not as much, because I think I'm focused on learning to be a better prose writer.
Right. So what inspires you when you do want to write poetry?
I think maybe a feeling, maybe an image, maybe something I read about or a line I hear somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
Those kinds of moments, I think, still inspire poetry in me.
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, if you just joined us, I'm talking to my special guest from the arts this week, Chitra Banerjee Divakaruni, award-winning, multi-award-winning, a best-selling author, poet, activist, and teacher. And I want to let you know, if you want more information about her, you can go to her website, Chitra Divakaruni, which is CHITRADIVAKARUNI.com. And also, if you're local to Santa Cruz, Chitra is going to be appearing here on the 28th of April at Bookshop Santa Cruz at 7 p.m. So you'll be able to meet her in person there. And if you're anywhere else in the country, then if you check her website, you'll be able to find out where she's going on her book tour. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com. It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Did you know about the Santa Cruz Art League on Broadway in Santa Cruz? Founded in 1919, it's 96 years young and provides a wonderful gallery space for local and national artists. It's a great place to view art with 14 shows a year and also to gain support if you're an artist yourself. There are art classes and weekend workshops, many taught by open studio artists. If you become a member, you receive a newsletter, discounts on classes, gifts and exhibit entries, images of your art on the Art League website, and guaranteed participation in the annual members show. It's also a great place to meet artists. Visit the Santa Cruz Art League at 562 Broadway or the website at scal.org. That's scal.org.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years.
Listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Chitra Banerjee Divakaruni, multi-award-winning and best-selling author, poet, activist, and teacher of writing. Chitra, you said that the birth of each new book is a very exciting event for you and that you're looking forward to the launch of your new book, Before We Visit the Goddess, as much as you did to your first collection of stories, Arranged Marriage. What keeps that level of excitement within you to continue to tell stories?
Well, partly, well, you know, publication, of course, is a whole different process from the writing.
Right.
The writing has
good
one
point.
Kind of excitement. Publication has a certain kind of nervousness because here you're setting your baby a sail in the world and you don't know how people will love your baby or not. So,
yes.
I think, you know, the actual publication has a lot of angst for me and continues to, because I feel that even though now I have a body of literature, each book is separate and each book has to stand on its own. So, you know, that's how I feel about the publication process. So I'm certainly hoping that all our listeners in Bookshop in Santa Cruz will come to Bookshop and support me.
Well, I'm certainly there. Encouraging people. I'll be there. So I hope to see many listeners there as well.
Okay, wonderful.
So what?
The writing.
Yeah.
The writing is always exciting because, I mean, I love it when a new idea just kind of appears. It's still very magical for me. I don't know where those ideas come from. They might have some logical connections to things I've read or things I've seen or people who've talked to me. But ultimately, the idea comes from a mysterious space of creativity within me.
Mm.
And that is very, very exciting when that happens. And then to nurture that idea and to kind of bring it to flowering and then to get involved with the technical and craft aspects of how this story is going to be told, who is going to be the narrator, how do I create a setting that pulls the readers in. That is always exciting and always challenging for me. I'm always pushing myself to reach for something I haven't done before.
Right. As you mentioned earlier, Before We Visit the Goddess tells the stories of three generations of women from grandmother to granddaughter. And one of the themes is, what does it mean to be a successful woman? What particular aspects of this did you want to consider in this book?
Well, you know, this has been a question that's very important to me in my personal life. My mother brought me and my brothers up as a single parent, which in India at that time, in the traditional context in which we lived, was very, very unusual and very challenging, very difficult for her. So she always wanted me, she always told me from the time I was in high school, you have to be successful. So that has always been a question for me. What does that mean? What does it mean to be a successful woman? And when I came to America, it seemed to me that that definition shifted and morphed into something else. So one of the questions in this book is, what does that mean for each person? And I hope that that's what the readers will also begin to think of. What does it mean to be a successful human being in the world? Does it change depending on the place in which you live, the time in which you live, yourself at different ages in your life? Mm-hmm. And the three main characters in the book, the grandmother Savitri, the mother Bela, and the daughter Tara, three different generations have to answer this question for themselves.
Right. In the East and West, women struggle with culturally defined expectations and limitations for women, which feminism has challenged, you know, to some degree. However, I sometimes feel feminism has created a situation where it feels like women have to be like men to be equal, rather than that feminine principles are being valued equally. I'm wondering if this is something that interests you to explore through your work.
Yes, it definitely does. And I'm always thinking about what is it that about the experience of being a woman that is valuable in the world for ourselves and for society. So I do believe that women have to be successful in their own way. It's not, I don't think we should try to be like men, although we can probably be better men than men can.
But controversial.
We should be women.
Yes. I mean, I feel like, you know, if women want to do what men do, then obviously they should be able to do that. But I think it's not that we have to do what men do in order to be equal. I think, you know, a lot of the caring that women do is still considered lesser, even by feminists. And I think that's a shame. I think it's like what you're saying, that women should be able to define their own success and what that means to them.
Exactly. And that's always, even in the activist work that I do with women who are survivors of abuse, that's one of the things I try to stress, which is that what's important is that a woman should be allowed to live life on her own terms, should be allowed to do what she wants to do, and should be valued for it.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Before we visit the goddess, explores the complex relationships between mothers and daughters and the different kinds of love that bind us across generations, how do you see this as related to the divine feminine?
Well, in some ways, and that's why the title of the book, which is one of the titles of the stories that make up this novel, is Before We Visit the Goddess. And I feel that, you know, the divine feminine is inside of all of us, but sometimes we blocked it. We blocked it with a lot of other things that we've superimposed on ourselves. We blocked it because we don't feel we can be ourselves. And sometimes we blocked it because things have happened in our life, and this is true of all the three women, and we can't forgive ourselves for it. And in some ways, we must forgive ourselves before we can be in touch with that deepest principle of the goddess within us.
Your characters are often depicted in challenging and sometimes tragic situations. How important is it to you to have redemptive aspects to the stories you tell, or life-affirming themes?
And I really believe in redemption, and I really believe in compassion and forgiveness. Those are values that are important in my life. Now, while creating fiction, I realized that, you know, not all stories can have a happy ending, and therefore different women will take different paths, and different men also, because, you know, I'm writing about men as well in this novel, as well as in other things that I've written. So, but I think that attempt is really important, that attempt to find the deeper part of us, to find redemption, is really important. And overall, I believe that that happens in the world. I believe in the possibility of redemption. So I certainly want to show that, at least in some of the stories that I write.
You're saying not all stories can have a happy ending. I know when I'm looking for a book, I'm always wanting a book that has a happy ending, because you sometimes feel like life is very difficult, and it's nice to kind of imagine into a world where things resolve perhaps more easily and quickly than in real life. But when you leave things unresolved, or you have stories where it doesn't have a happy ending, what are you hoping the reader takes from that?
Well, some of my stories, like in my novel, One Amazing Thing, the ending is very open-ended, so it can be interpreted by the reader.
Right.
So sometimes I'm looking for that kind of reader involvement. I think I am very moved and engaged by stories like that, where I have to make some decisions about what I think really happened. So some of the time I'm doing that. And some of the time when the books don't have conventionally happy endings, I do try to show how the character has grown as a result of the difficult things that have happened. And that itself is a happy ending on another level, on a psychological level, perhaps. I know that in my own life, the events that have made me grow the most were not the happiest ones necessarily.
No, that's sometimes, very true.
Sometimes they were the more difficult ones. But out of that, I've come out being a stronger person and hopefully one with better values and one who's maybe able to cope with things in a better way. And that's the kind of hope I'm offering my readers when the stories don't have conventionally happy endings.
Right, yes, yeah, that makes sense. Pondering the struggles for the characters in your novels, particularly the female characters, I was wondering how much these are or have been your struggles and whether you feel that your art helps you to work through things in your own psyche.
You know, I think to an extent it does, but really my characters, as my teenage children have been quick to point out, have much more exciting and dangerous lives than I do. My life has been pretty much on an even keel. I'm more of an observer of life than one who jumps into adventures, which I think is a good thing for a writer to be, because if I was out there having adventures all the time, I surely wouldn't be writing all these books.
Right, yeah. So you're living through your characters to some degree.
Yes, I'm observing. I do observe people carefully, and I'm interested in people, and a lot of that makes its way into my work. But ultimately, it is the imagination. I think, for me, imagination is key to writing a good story.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Some people believe that the arts can be a healing mechanism, even help us process trauma. I'm wondering whether you see a healing aspect to the arts at all.
I do see a healing aspect to the arts, not so much in that I have a trauma and then I write about it and then I'm healed through that process, although that too does happen. But I think when we write about things that are deep and human, we heal other people. We heal the people who read this. And one of my favorite quotes about books is from Franz Kafka, who says something like this. He says, "A book should be an axe to shatter the frozen sea that is inside each one of us."
Wow, that's a wonderful quote.
So I think, I love that quote, because I think that's what books do. Books connect us to each other. They make us understand and feel the human experience. They make us feel compassionate towards people not only who are like us. So maybe, you know, I come from the Indian background. I'm writing about Indian American characters. But the book allows you to transcend those cultural boundaries and feel the human experience of the character. And I think that's really, really important, that learning of empathy that comes through art.
Yes, yeah. And also there's this unique thing with the written word as an art form, where you, as a reader, you're very much in your own world. I mean, the book almost doesn't exist until you read it, and it's inside your own mind with your own imagination and all your input into what you're reading, which is an interesting mix. I think that's what that does to us psychologically as we read a work.
Yes, I read somewhere recently that experiments have been done with people who read fiction and people who don't read fiction, and their brains have developed differently, and people who read fiction have a much more, you know, the sector of the brain that deals with imagination and creativity is much more developed in them.
Oh.
So I thought that was very interesting.
Yes.
And I think reading also gives us comfort in a whole other way. Another of my favorite quotes about reading says, "We read to know that we are not alone." You know, reading gives us that community of people who are also going through their problems. They're also suffering. And, you know, many of these are archetypal human experiences. Someone falls in love, someone gets married, someone's marriage breaks up. Parents are estranged from children, or, you know, wonderful things happen. And when the reader reads it, they're like, "Yes, I have felt it too."
Yes, yeah. I think that is a very powerful thing. And also when you read from the past, you know, you can read texts that are thousands of years old and
I mean, I was reading Marcus Aurelius, and you read something he was writing, pondering, and you think, wow, there's something comforting about, you know, the fact that there's this human experience that goes through time that we're all in together.
Absolutely, absolutely. You've just put it beautifully. That's what I mean.
Yeah. In your new book, Before We Visit the Goddess, you switch between different time periods and different narrative tenses and voices, sometimes third person, sometimes first person. Is that something you plan out in advance, or is it a more organic process?
Well, it is a more organic process. I think most of my writing is an organic process, although I did start with certain parameters. I wanted to tell the stories of these three women. I wanted some of them to be in third person and some in first person, but I wanted readers to really connect with each woman. Mm. And that was going to be a challenge because I knew that there would be many frictions between these women, so that, you know, they are not always sympathetic towards one another. So my challenge was to make the reader feel equally sympathetic towards the grandmother when we were in her voice or her perspective, and then the same thing for the mother when we were in her perspective, and the same thing for the daughter. But, you know, a lot of times these women are angry with each other, so
yeah,
that would create, I felt, an additional, a good tension for the reader.
Yes, yeah. And you also, a lot of the different chapters are in completely different times. I was just wondering how you came up with that, you know, idea of telling the story at one point in the book, you know, goes back through time each chapter. What were you hoping, you know, to give to the story by approaching it in that way?
Well, I wanted to have a story that was not linear, but that was connected to emotional time.
Mm.
So important emotional moments come up for each character.
Mm.
And I've kind of created an emotional, a thread, an emotional thread that runs through the book. So it's often thematically grouped. One character is feeling a certain way, and then we see another character maybe years later in time feeling that way or responding to that feeling or remembering that earlier incident. So, you know, a lot of writing, even though a lot of human experience, even though we think we are logical and linear, it's really through remembrance.
That's true.
Do you feel that? Like,
yes.
Our memories come up at strange moments. I'm like, sometimes I'm like, wow, what made me think of that? But it's a powerful experience.
Yeah.
So we're very associative. I think human beings are very associative creatures, and I wanted to really reproduce that in some way in this book.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't really thought of it like that, but that is true. We're constantly sort of having different images, and I'm very interested in also how the memories kind of iconographic. There's certain memories that seem to always come up about certain periods too. Yeah.
Yes, and memory always surprises me, so I hope that the memorial associations of this book will surprise readers in a good way as well.
Yes, yeah, I'm sure. Well, if you just joined us, I'm talking to my special guest this week, Chitra Banerjee Divakaruni, award-winning best-selling author, poet, activist, and teacher of writing. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
And I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel, and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Chitra Banerjee Divakaruni, award-winning, best-selling author, poet, activist, and teacher of writing. And just to remind you again, if you want more information about Chitra, you can go to her website, Chitra Divakaruni, that's chitradivakaruni.com. And also for Santa Cruz locals, Chitra is going to be here at Bookshop Santa Cruz on the 28th of April at 7 p.m. You can find out more information at bookshopsantacruz.com, but hopefully you'll come along to that and then you can meet Chitra in person and support the launch of her new book. She was saying she would like some support. We're very happy to give it to you, Chitra.
Thank you.
You've said that one of your five favorite books of all time is The Lord of the Rings, and of course this book's a tremendous work of fantasy, but it also operates very powerful at an archetypal level, and we mentioned archetypes earlier. I'm wondering how much you consider the power of archetypes when you're writing.
Archetypes have been very, very important to me right from my first novel, The Mistress of Spices, which is about a woman healer who uses spices to help the people who come to her little grocery store. So, you know, I keep going back to mythic figures and archetypal figures. Certainly in a novel like Palace of Illusions, which is a retelling of the epic, the Mahabharata, from my Indian culture, but retelling it from the point of view of a woman. And now in this novel and stories, this is a very archetypal character, archetypal situation. Three generations of women, the grandmother, the mother, and the daughter. And in some ways, the book opens with a crisis in the family, and the mother, the second generation, Bela, she calls her mother and says, do you have some wisdom to impart to your granddaughter? Because I think, you know, my daughter Tara is about to make a big, big mistake in her life.
Mm.
So, you know, looking back to ancestors' figures for wisdom, I think that is a very archetypal situation. But, of course, I want to interlace that with the ironies of living in the world today. So the grandmother, she's like, what can I write? And she's very, she's taken aback. She doesn't know what wisdom she could possibly impart.
Mm.
But as the book goes on, yes, she will impart some wisdom, but maybe in ways that are original and very related to her own life.
Mm.
So it's a mixture of the archetypal and the original, and it's a mixture of that which doesn't change and that which today's world is, which is changing rapidly all the time.
Yes, absolutely. And you mix reality and fantasy at times in your work in a very natural way. What advantages do you feel that this has in storytelling rather than making a narrative out-and-out fantasy?
Well, I one of my deep beliefs is that this world that we live in, there's a lot in it that's mysterious. This world that we think of as realistic is really only partly realistic, and a lot of it is mysterious, magical, intuitive, things that cannot be explained through logical argument. I mean, even the hearts of human beings, I think those are very magical spaces.
Yes.
So I want to show the magic in that. I mean, I have written out-and-out fantasy also in the young adult novel, The Conch Bearer, for example.
Mm.
And I've written magical realism in novels like Mistress of Spices and The Queen of Dreams, which is about a woman who's a dream interpreter.
Mm.
But here in Before We Visit the Goddess, I'm looking for the magic and the mystery that's available in human hearts.
Mm.
And how sometimes, yes, miraculous things will happen in lives that seem very steeped in the real world.
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking of the magician character.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very interesting Before We Visit the Goddess. But
yes, no, the magician was very interesting. He was a character that just came to me. So for our listeners here, the magician is about Bela, when she is a girl, she's just moved to Assam in this very wild landscape, and she meets this man whom apparently no one else can see, and she calls him her magician. And we won't give away any more, but that's the intersection of the real world and the world of the imagination that I really wanted to bring into this book.
Yes, yeah. And I think it's very valuable to bring that out, because, you know, the more technical the world becomes, the more we're embedded in that and not in these mysterious worlds. And yet, really, we know almost nothing about the world and universe we live in, and yet we tend to sort of start feeling like, oh, we know everything because we've got computers and we've got this, that and the other. So I think that mysterious aspect of life is very valuable to explore.
Thank you. I really agree, and I do believe that art puts us in touch with that mysterious world. And we were talking about creativity earlier, and that again is one of the miracles and mysteries of existence. How is it that these ideas come to us? How is it that we can imagine lives and we can create art about that, and that art can reach people maybe 500 years later?
Yes.
I mean, all these things are very mysterious.
Yeah, that's true. I got shivers when you were saying that. It is true. It sort of, I mean, art seems to be one of the things that does last over time. You know, other things crumble and fade away, you know, different power structures, but art does have this capacity, I think, to reach across time. Two of your books have been made into films, the wonderful Mistress of Spices and Sister of My Heart. How does it feel to see your work translated into a visual format where the characters are sort of solidly defined for viewers rather than being left somewhat to the imagination of each reader?
It was a wonderful experience both times. And I was blessed because I had friends who'd had this books into movie experience happen for them. So they had primed me. They had said, do not expect the film to be like your movie. Because if you expect that, that's the road to all tragedy.
Right, yeah.
So I had gone in there to say, I will look at this as an art construct of its own.
Right.
And because I went with that kind of expectation, I just loved the movies.
Oh,
they were
good.
Different from the books. And they had the directors who were wonderful directors had imagined the characters differently and had imagined the spaces differently. But I just allowed myself, you know, to get into that space and enjoy it. So I loved that experience. And I love the fact that movies bring so many other kinds of people, different people, to, they bring more readers to the books in different ways.
Yes, no, I think that's definitely true. When you like a film, and you're always assuming, I am anyway, that the book will be better because you can just say so much more in a book than you can in a film. So I'm sure that is true, that it does bring more people in. You've judged several prestigious awards, such as the National Book Award and the Penn Faulkner Award. What are you looking for when you read a book that you feel elevates it above others?
I think a book that makes me think newly about human experience. I'm always looking for that. That shows me something in a way that I didn't think of it before, so that there's a pleasure of discovery, and which balances that with the pleasure of recognition, where I feel, yes, this is the human condition. But
right.
Then I also feel, wow, this book is saying something different about this human condition that is important and central to our lives.
Right. Interesting.
And memorable characters. I'm always looking for characters that will grab hold of me and not let me go, and that I'll keep thinking about them after I've turned that last page. And that is my great hope, and that's what I'm always aiming for myself as a writer.
Yes, yeah, interesting. Another author I interviewed, Christopher Jansma, he teaches writing as you do, and he said he tells his students, write the book that you would like to see in the world but does not exist. So
yes.
It kind of sounds like that's what you're saying in a way, is we have to still relate to it. It can't be so wacky that, you know, we can't relate to it, but it is looking at a different aspect.
Yes, yes. That's a great challenge.
Yes, well, exactly, yes, yeah. With the increase of globalization and immigration in various places in the world, it seems that cultural pluralism is more important than ever, and yet in various countries, including America, we're seeing a rise of nativism as people fear the loss of a certain way of life. I'm wondering if you feel that art is one way we can explore our fears about this and perhaps understand our fellow human beings better.
Yes, absolutely. That is, again, one of my hopes for my works. That is one of the reasons I write. It is to celebrate the multicultural, to celebrate the diverse, because whether we like it or not, we live in a global world, we live in a diverse world, and we can either fight it or we can embrace it, but it's there as part of our experience. So I think it's a much healthier way to live is to appreciate the other, to celebrate one's own culture, of course, to hold on to one's own tradition, but to also celebrate the other.
Yes.
To accept the other, to celebrate the other, to see that the presence of the other enriches my own life. I think that has really been the American experience for many years. The, you know, immigrants have enriched life in America and amazing ways. It's transformed this country, just as, you know, America has transformed us immigrants. So I think that's a very important message for us all today. And, you know, I certainly hope that my books bring that message forward. Books are a wonderful and non-threatening way of beginning to embrace diversity.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We're going towards the end of the show, but I did want to ask you, I mentioned in the introduction your work with the organisations Maitre Dea and Pratham. I'm not really sure how you have time to fit social activism into your incredibly full life. So what motivates you to find the time to work with these organisations?
You know, those issues are really important to me. I think I got involved in women's issues when I was going to graduate school at UC Berkeley, and it's just been with me all the time. I started working with survivors of domestic violence right at that time, and it just seemed to me so, so important, because sometimes when you're in a situation of domestic violence, you feel absolutely alone. You feel completely helpless and hopeless. And sometimes the first step you need into moving out of that is knowing that there's someone else out there who's ready to listen to you, who's ready to care, and who's maybe ready to work through some of the issues with you and find you some alternatives to this life of abuse that you're leading. It just seems to me very, very important. It seems to me that every woman, every human being certainly, but women are usually the victims of these situations of domestic abuse, or trafficking, which is something that these organizations also work with. Every human being deserves an abuse-free life.
Yes, absolutely.
And these women deserve an abuse-free life. So I feel really strongly about this issue. And I guess when you really care about something, then you just make time for it in your life. You just take out something else that's not as important. And Pratham, which works with slum children in India, educating them, I feel that that's so important. And, you know, that's a big topic in Before We Visit the Goddess, that education is very important. It transforms lives. In the case of the book, all three generations of women feel the importance of education. Some are able to get it and some are not. But Pratham is bringing education and therefore hope and therefore transformation to literally millions of children in India. And I mean, I felt like, how could I not be part of that process? If I can be part of that process, how blessed am I to, you know, make a small change in the world in that way?
Yes, absolutely. And I think part of education, it's not just learning, but it's also how it teaches you to think critically in a different way, which can be very empowering. And I think that's part of also what's going on in Before We Visit the Goddess, the education in it, both the formal and informal, just through life experience, is helping the women to get to a point of thinking differently and knowing themselves differently.
Yes, and thinking of opportunities in a different manner, knowing that there are other ways to live than what they are used to, knowing that there are other solutions to this problem that they find themselves in. And I think that's what education does. It just opens up the world for you and it gives you hope. It lets you see beyond your immediate life and its problems, which sometimes can seem so overwhelming.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Chitra.
It was absolutely my pleasure. Thank you, Ruth.
And I wish you all the best with Before We Visit the Goddess. And just to remind local listeners that Chitra will be at Bookshop Santa Cruz on the 28th of April at 7 p.m. So you can see her then. And for listeners around the country, if you go to her website, chitradivakaruni.com, you can find information on other places that she will be visiting on her book tour. So thanks very much again to Chitra. And just to remind you, you can visit the show's website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. You can listen to podcasts there of all my previous guests. And if you enjoy this show today, remember you can tell your friends about it. They can go to the website and they can hear it at their leisure when they choose to listen to it.